have up to 20 minutes to argue in this case. Mr. Riley, good morning to you.
Please the court and Chief Justice, members of the court. Thomas Riley, Public County Public Defender's Office, on behalf of the appellant Avery Tyler, who currently is appealing his conviction and sentence for murder in the first degree, and for which he received a life sentence, and use of a firearm, for which he received a consecutive 20 to 30 year sentence. We're asking that the court reverse the conviction and sentence and remand for a new trial. The facts of the case arise from a confrontation outside of a bar in Omaha called the Halo Bar. The deceased and some of his friends and his girlfriend were walking, and a group of other people, one of whom was alleged to have been the defendant, have a confrontation which results in a shooting death of the deceased. I believe that happened in 2nd or 3rd of December of 2012, first week anyway of September of 2012. No arrests were immediately made. Investigation resulted in suspicion coming to Mr. Tyler there, and the police obtained search warrants for his automobile and several residences that he was associated with. Searches and the items that they obtained as a result of the searches that we are challenging here today. Basically, the police, with regard to the search of, there's a cell phone that was obtained as a result of the stopping of the defendant's vehicle. The defendant was an employee of Mutual of Omaha. The police obtained a warrant to search the vehicle and staked out. They did not have an arrest warrant for the defendant, and the search warrant did not provide for a search of the occupants of the vehicle or the defendant. And we are arguing on several counts that the search was invalid and violated the Fourth Amendment, both with regard to the invalidity of the search warrant itself, with regard to the seizure of the cell phone, and with regard to the consent issue as to whether or not valid consent was granted by the defendant after it was taken. As I said, they staked out at the parking lot of Mutual. They staked out his vehicle. They knew about what time he would be getting off work. Instead of going right to the car with the search warrant and searching it, they waited for him, I suggest, in hopes of being able to search him as well, even though they didn't have the authority to do so. He gets in the car, goes a half a block, and a cruiser officer stops him. And at the suppression hearing, Mr. Tyler stated that once he was stopped by the police officer, the uniformed officer, a gun was pulled on him. He was raised his hands. He was handcuffed. He was patted down, and they took from his pocket the cell phone, placed the cell phone on the front seat of the car, put Mr. Tyler in the back seat of the marked cruiser car, awaiting the detectives to show up.
Okay, now let me ask you at that point, are you arguing they did not have a valid arrest?
That's right. They had a warrant to search his vehicle. They didn't have an arrest warrant. They admittedly didn't have probable cause on its face to arrest him. So the Supreme Court case that I cited from 1948, that De Ree case, says that a search warrant allowing to search a vehicle does not give the authorities the right to search the occupants of the vehicle based on the warrant.
They had a right to stop him and look at his vehicle, or did they have to wait till he finished driving the vehicle before they searched?
Well, they had the place staked out.
Right.
They could have gone and searched the vehicle themselves without him there. They wanted to create this situation, I suggest.
But did it? The detectives that followed up, were they at the scene And did they testify that the phone was in the console between the seats?
Here's what happened. At the at the suppression hearing, Tyler testified as to what I just described. He said they took it from his person, from his pocket, the uniformed officer. The uniformed officer was not called by the state to testify. At the suppression hearing, the two detectives, Schneider and Gordon, acknowledged that they were not present when the initial stop occurred, that when they got there, Mr. Tyler was seated in the back seat of the cruiser vehicle, and they, neither one of them could remember where the cell phone was at the time, other than thinking it was in the car somewhere. Then at the trial, of course, they tried to clean it up a little bit, but by then it doesn't really make any difference. The issue was already resolved based on what happened at the suppression hearing.
And but, of course, Mr. Riley, we can consider what was presented at trial. We're not limited to what was offered at the suppression hearing, right?
Well, you can consider it, but if you're going to base your opinion on what the court's order was on the suppression motion, he totally overlooked in the order. When you review the order, and I'm sure you already have, but basically he, Judge Doherty, the trial judge, just overlooked the question of the seizure of the phone.
He didn't make any findings in that regard.
He didn't say anything. He ignored the issue. We raised it. It
was in the credibility issue.
There was no conflicting testimony.
Your point is we don't have to defer to the factual finding that the phone was in the console between the seats.
I'm sorry?
Your point is we don't have to defer to any factual findings that the phone was in the console in between the seats.
Well, the point is, at the suppression hearing, the court, in its order, made no such finding.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
That's correct.
It didn't make a finding one way or the other.
Well, one would assume that that the court ignored the question of whether or not the phone was unlawfully seized, and said that the subsequent permission to search the phone obviated, that's the only way I can read it, obviated the unlawful seizure of the phone in the first place. Neither the court nor opposing counsel has cited any cases that make that stand for that proposition.
That's an interesting question. Could the defendant at the suppression hearing give limited testimony that when I was stopped, the phone was in my pocket?
Did he what?
Could he have testified to that at the suppression hearing, that when I was stopped, the phone was in my
pocket? He did.
He did?
Yes.
Okay.
He did say that. He said that the police, after they stopped him, they had a gun on him, told him to get out of the car, and they took the cell phone from his
And so
pocket.
If it's on his person, the warrant didn't cover that?
That's correct.
Okay.
But Mr.
Riley, even though he testified to that, the trial court was not bound to accept his testimony.
He's not bound to accept it, but what was the contrary testimony?
Even in the absence of any contrary testimony, a trial judge doesn't have to credit the testimony of a witness. Isn't that correct?
And in a suppression hearing, I think this court has directed the trial judges to make such findings.
And
he did not make any finding addressing that issue at all.
And nobody asked him to. This record
is... This court has asked him to and told him to.
This record is devoid of any issue asserting a State versus Osborne problem, right?
No, it's not. It's right in my motion. We raised it at the suppression hearing, and the judge elected to ignore it.
What I'm saying is, at no point does this record show that you or anyone representing the defendant ever said to the trial court, your findings are incomplete, we need more findings.
No, I didn't say that your findings are incomplete. I said your findings are wrong. And at the motion for a new trial, I raised it.
Raised that the findings were wrong.
Incorrect. That's right. Incomplete.
Is the motion for new trial in the record?
I believe so.
We'll take a look. Thank you.
That there were a number of issues that
your evidence was that the officers, or their state's evidence was, when they went to search the car, the cell phone was lying right on the
seat. That's what they're saying, yeah. But the question is how it got there. Mm-hmm. And Tyler, the uncontroverted testimony of Tyler is that they took it from his person. The police officer who was the uniform officer who made the initial stop, the prosecutors elected not to call. Who has the burden of proof in these things?
Okay, so they took the cell phone. Let's assume that they had the cell phone. They took it and that it was in his pocket at the time.
Right.
What about the waiver of his rights with regard to the use of the phone after they had seized the phone?
Right. The point is...
Can he waive that right by saying, it's okay, you know, it was in my pocket, but now you have it, and I want my phone back, and I'll let you take it down and run your tests on the phone to...
That's the point that I was trying to make earlier, yeah. Your Honor, is that I am unaware, nor has the state or the trial court presented any case that says that an initial unlawful seizure is obviated by a subsequent permission to search that item that was the content of the
evidence.
Would
that be a logical progression of the fact, though, that if they said, you know, we want to search your cell phone, we've got it now, we haven't done anything with it,
right,
but we now want to search it, will you let us do that if we promise to give it back to you in a short period of time?
Well, that's kind of what they did.
Yeah,
that's what they did.
Does that waive the illegal seizure?
No, I'm not aware of any case that says that, and my position is that it does not. Okay. That the initial unlawful seizure is not obviated by subsequent permission to search, which in
because the issue should never have come up in the first place because they didn't have the right to have the phone.
That's okay. My position, yes. And with regard to the search warrants, there was a search warrant for a residence that resulted in the seizure of a box and a holster that was to a specific type of weapon that was consistent with the cartridge casings that were found at the scene. And, of course, the contents of the cell phone, even if you want to say that the cell phone was not on the defendant's person, which I strongly disagree with that conclusion, but even so, the search warrant itself for the car is a general search warrant, and I know this court has recently addressed in Henderson the question of these search warrants that the Omaha Police Department is routinely obtaining.
Are you saying that this warrant is overly broad or just doesn't apply? I mean, if they had a warrant to search the car and the cell phone was in plain sight on the seat, certainly they could seize that, couldn't they?
The search, on what grounds? They have no evidence that the cell phone had anything to do with any criminal activity. I don't think that, the reason we have search warrants, I thought, was in part to particularize and minimize what can be taken. The particularity requirement doesn't say what the judges are signing in Douglas County. Any and all evidence that might be found. I mean, for goodness' sake.
The rationale that he might have done something on his cell phone that would implicate him in the murder wouldn't.
Yeah, you know, but in Henderson, the court noted that in the second search warrant, the officer made, as part of the affidavit, the statement that his experience allows him to determine that people who shoot people frequently text message or brag about it. There's no such thing in this case. So there's no particular. I mean, basically, these are two general search warrants. They don't describe anything other than clothes. But doesn't say what kind of clothes, what specific clothes. Just says clothes.
There was not a specific warrant to search the cell phone.
No.
Or seize a phone.
I'm sorry.
Or seize a phone.
Right. Right.
Or a pathway through a pathway through the phone.
No, they didn't ask for anything. They just said any and all evidence. Basically, what they said, we want to search this residence for clothes, any firearms, even though they have evidence at the scene that the weapon was a specific type of caliber. But they don't say I want to find a, you know, whatever caliber it was. any and all evidence, any and all firearms, any and all clothing. That is so beyond the pale that there's no way on earth that this satisfies the Fourth Amendment particularity requirement.
Mr. Riley, I'm sure you don't want to misstate the record, so I want to be clear on this. Doesn't item 2 of the search warrants specifically state the ability to seize any items of evidentiary value to include clothing and cellular phone?
Yes, that's correct. But they didn't specifically say what was on the cell phone.
Okay, so seizing the phone is one thing.
But they don't say why.
Examining the phone its contents is something different.
That's correct.
So
yes.
In terms of actually seizing the phone pursuant to the warrant, you're not complaining about the particularity of that?
Not on the warrant part.
All right, thanks.
Okay, as far as the car goes. I'm still saying that it was taken off his person and it shouldn't have been.
Right.
But I
understand that argument. But as far as the particularity of the warrant is concerned.
That's correct.
All right, thank you.
But lacking particularity once you have the phone, about the path through the phone.
That's right. And they don't say why they think. I mean, it's like, is there a per se probable cause to search cell phones?
Let's see, then once they seized the cell phone, then they got him to waive the right to let them.
Well, again, that goes to the question of whether the unlawful seizure is obviated by the subsequent permission to search, which I tell you it is not. Let me add that it has become routine, and I'm sure you've seen these all the time, that when they're searching, either including cars and residences, they're asked to allow them, the court, to search for venue items. As I pointed out in my brief, I did a rather exhaustive search of the term venue items, and it seems that the only place on earth that venue items have something to do with searches is in Douglas County, Nebraska.
Well, what is a venue item?
What they're claiming it is some evidence to show that the person that they're interested in lives there or has some attachment to it. Well, if they didn't have that information, why are they searching the place in the first place? It's a circular argument. It gives them a blanket authority to search for anything. I want to look for venue items.
Well,
if you're looking for a shotgun...
That'd be an electric bill saying that the defendant's name's on this envelope and, the address corresponds to where it is.
Look through every drawer, every part of the clock. If you're looking for a shotgun because the shotgun is used and say, plus I want to look for venue items, then you can go everywhere. What is the purpose of the venue items? It turns every search warrant, I suggest to the court, honestly, turns every search warrant into a general warrant. So it's not only the particularity requirement, but also the fact that it's a general warrant that is prohibited by the Fourth Amendment.
Do you have any experience generally or in this record as to what the officers believe the venue means when they're executing a warrant?
Well, it's somehow, apparently, it is somehow transmitted to the judges that venue items mean these things. And in testimony,
it's proof that the defendant lives where the search.
Yeah, they're looking for mail. But they're looking for some, or a bill from OPBD or something like that to say, hey, the defendant is associated with this house. Well, if he wasn't associated with the house.
And that might be relevant to, say, for example, giving authority to search or withholding it.
Well, they're already searching.
As distinguished from a tenant or so forth.
What they're doing is they're trying to use it for evidence at the trial that the defendant has some connection to that residence or to that vehicle.
You're saying before they got the warrant, they would have to prove that.
Well, of course. That's why I turned it into a general warrant. I have only a minute left. I'd like to address the good faith issue. The way the courts have been dealing with it is frequently it's not addressed at the trial level if the court determines that the warrant is valid. And then on appeal, we may prevail and convince this court, you know what, this warrant is no good. But then good faith saves it. And it puts us in a bit of a circular situation because some of the things that indicate that good faith doesn't apply are types of things that would be raised at a suppression hearing if the judge said, hey, this warrant's no good. And then the state would say, we have a good faith, and they put on some evidence, or we would put on some evidence. I mean, typically, if we've got some evidence that some of the information in the warrant or the affidavit is insufficient, Frank versus Delaware says we can't do anything. You've got to go on the warrant. Only when can I finish this thought?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Only when the question of good faith comes up would those types of issues be litigated at the trial court level. Most of the cases that I've seen dealing with good faith are situations where the trial court at the suppression hearing said that the warrant was insufficient for whatever reason, but good faith applied, and then he litigated, and then the court says, oh, we're going to review whether good faith applies or not. Just doing it kind of sua sponte puts defendants in a very, very, I think, unfair position where we can't really argue, hey, wait a minute, some of these good faith exceptions, why it wouldn't apply, are applicable here, because we didn't put any evidence on about it. So thank you for allowing me to go over it, Mr. Chief Justice. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Tangerman, good morning.
May it please the Court, I'm Erin Tangerman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. Tyler's first two assignments of error relate to the seizure and subsequent search of his cell phone. He argues that the district court erred in failing to suppress the evidence obtained from his cell phone because the seizure was invalid and the consent he gave to search the phone was not voluntary. Regarding the seizure, Tyler claims that after he was pulled over, the uniformed officer patted him down, removed his wallet and his cell phone from his pocket, and placed those items on the driver's seat of his vehicle. Of Tyler's vehicle. He testified that he and the uniform officer then walked back to the patrol car and sat there until the detectives arrived with the search warrant. He also testified that once the detectives got there, they sat there and waited until the crime scene technician arrived. At that point, the crime scene tech then took pictures of the exterior and interior of the car.
Other than the defendant, the only person that had any knowledge of what happened is the officer who did not testify. Is that right?
Prior to the detective's arrival, yes. The crime scene tech took pictures of the inside and the outside of the car prior to the search being performed.
What did that show as to the location of the phone?
It showed the cell phone sitting in the cup holder in the center console. There was no wallet on the driver's seat like the defendant claimed, and his cell phone was in a cup holder.
Well, if it were on his person, did the state have a right to seize it when they pulled him over to search the car?
I don't think so. It was not part of the warrant. They did not arrest him after, but the state's position is that it was in the car and not on his person.
Well, but suppose it was on his person. Did he effectively waive that when he signed a waiver?
I think when you can argue, yes, that the consent basically means any type of Fourth Amendment violation, the exclusionary rule shouldn't apply because he did voluntarily consent to the search of the phone at the time and things of that nature.
Was he handcuffed at the time he waived it?
No, he was not. He was, after the search was over, he was removed from the car, he was unhandcuffed. At that time, he had the discussion with the detectives about the phone. They told him they found the phone in the car, that it was their intention to download the internal components of the phone to do a search. And they told him there are two ways this could be done. They could either apply for an affidavit, fill out an affidavit and apply for a search warrant like they did for the car, or that he could consent. And they told him that it was up to him, it was his choice to make. He testified that he basically wanted his phone back quickly, and so that's why he ended up signing the form that he did and apparently giving him his passcode.
So it's your position the waiver not only permitted the search, but it also waived any rights of an illegal seizure of the phone?
Yes, if there was an illegal seizure.
Do you have any case law for that?
I think it just goes to the case law that talks about whether when the exclusionary rule applies. I believe the concurrence that you wrote in Magellanus was maybe the most recent one that kind of talks about whether a consensual search that is following a violation of the Fourth Amendment, whether or not that purges the taint, kind of goes through that. I think what's important here, he wasn't under arrest. His car was given back to him. He not only gave verbal consent at the time, but he also drove down to the police station on his own. He signed a consent form. I think it's clear that the exclusionary rule should not apply if there was an illegal seizure. Regarding the consent, the circumstances, the totality of the circumstances clearly demonstrate that it was voluntary. He was 25 years old. He had a degree in business administration and was close to receiving a master's degree at the time. He worked as a business intelligence analyst. And as I said, he was explained what they wanted to do with the phone and that it was his choice. It was his decision. The rationale that he gave for agreeing to this, that he wanted his phone back quicker, it doesn't make his consent involuntary, but it instead shows that he willingly agreed to the search. He was given a choice and he made that choice. And thus, the state submits that Tyler's first two assignments of error have no merit. Regarding the third assignment of error, Tyler argues that the district court erred in failing to suppress the gun lock and the cell phone because the relevant search warrants violate the particularity requirement. I guess the first thing I would note is that the two items that he's challenging on appeal, the cell phone and the gun lock, both of those items were specifically listed in the warrant. Well, the cell phone was listed specifically, and the gun lock was listed in the sense that it's companion equipment to a firearm. It didn't fall under any catch-all provision or anything like that. As I set forth in my brief, you know, the state submits that the warrants were not too broad to meet the particularity requirement, and if this court would happen to disagree, I think good faith clearly applies here.
Would a venue requirement be overly broad when, in order to search the residence, you have to establish there's some reason why the defendant lives there, don't you? What would be the purpose?
I think in this
what would be
case,
the purpose of allowing the state to go through and look at everything in the whole house as under the guise of doing a venue search?
Well, I don't know about other cases and if they do this typically, but in this case, they searched three separate residences. Tyler was 25 years old, and he lived with his grandmother part-time, he lived with his mother part-time, and he lived with his girlfriend part-time. So I think they maybe, I don't know if they knew for sure exactly where he was all the time, but I think it also establishes, if they could find stuff to the crime, that it's not just who else was involved, but it links him to it also. Unless this court has any additional questions, the state asks that you affirm the judgment of the district.
Thank you very much. And there is no time for rebuttal. So we will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Maxilama. I'm not doing that right. Kano, Samoya. With my apologies to your client, Mr. Strader, good morning. And please note, Chief Judge Moore,